Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast.
And it's from this that we go to my friend Kurt Schlichter. I have to say, and everybody knows Kurt Schlichter, he's got stuff in Town Hall, you see him on Fox, we've known each other for over a decade. And I have to say congratulations on having the number one bestseller in political fiction, one of the top online right now, top books on Amazon, which I think is actually more valuable than the New York Times because they don't weight them against where they're sold, et cetera, and kind of who you are. But the book is The Split. It is the sixth in your best-selling political thriller fiction. And boy, oh boy, is this so apropos right now, because it really gets into, I mean, it's inspired by current era.
It is. It's the conceit is that America is split into red and blue countries. The red country is centered in Texas and embodies a lot of the things that we talk about. It's not perfect. I don't sugarcoat things. But the blue is like California times a faculty lounge times 100, and it's crazy. And the hero goes in and he brings his Wilson combat pistol, and there's shooting and there's mocking of liberals, and people are giving each other their pronouns. And it's, you know, it's this wild, humorous, action-packed ride. Kind of what I wanted to read. When I did the first one, People's Republic, it's back there. I just said, look, I want to write something I want to read. And I was inspired by our mutual friend, Andrew Breitbart. And he said, politics is downstream from culture. We've got to be in the culture game, Dana. And this is my attempt to do it. And it's been remarkably successful. I mean, I'm ahead of, a lot of these fiction writers.
Yeah, you are.
And it's on the Amazon charts. And it's really amazing. I do like to point out, in 60 hours, I sold more books than Brian Stelter, who has a nominal TV network, which caters to airport travel.
I think you also outsold Hunter Biden. You also outsold Hunter Biden, didn't you? Yeah.
Oh. Well, yeah. You would think with all the meth and cocaine, he'd be like rushed to get out there and sell his book. But apparently not. He's painting. George Bush.
Yes. They're painting.
Yeah, we ought to have a gallery of failure. I love that idea. The gallery of failure. We'd have the picture of George Bush's pictures of the guys his incompetence mutilated. And we can have whatever the hell Hunter Biden's coming up with.
I think it's like bacteria.
He's popped up on Bolivian marching powder. And that would be a major, amazing exposition.
I would actually probably go to that. In that context, I would completely go to that. We're talking to Kurt Schlichter.
The after party would be killer.
It would definitely.
Yeah, Hunter's like, I'll take care of the catering.
Yeah, everybody, I'm going to stop making crazy jokes about this because I'm made of them right now. We're talking to my friend Kurt Schlichter. His latest book, The Split, which is tops right now, bestseller, and we were telling him congrats on that. Okay, so a couple of things. I know you watched the town hall last night. You were watching the town hall with the, or at least you were kind of watching it. You were keeping up with it. Whenever something crazy comes up, you remark on it. What was your takeaway? I mean, did you walk away from that town hall more informed? Did you have any questions answered, or was it a continuation of partisanship?
I walked away a stupider person.
So it was a deficit.
I actually went negative. On a scale of 1 to 10, it was like minus 15. Look, the guy is. I don't want to be mean, but the guy is obviously senile, and somebody has to, the emperor doesn't have new clothes on. He's going commando, man. Somebody's got to say it out loud. I find it baffling. Perhaps they're so terrified of President Kamala. I mean, I'm terrified of President Kamala.
No.
That nobody wants to pull the trigger on the 25th Amendment. The guy isn't well. And of course, you had Don Lemon there too, who kicked me off CNN after
I remember Hillary Clinton's little issues.
It was just a festival of failure. I mean, there wasn't a hardball in sight. There wasn't a tough question.
Right.
It was just a chance for the world's biggest Matlock super fan to throw off the shawl, move aside the bowl of gruel for a minute, and stagger around the stage. I mean, it was actually painful.
And some of the answers that he gave, and there were a couple, like and I'll get to the when he was asked about the defunding, but I wanted to play this really quickly, audio soundbite 2, because this was very this was some of the worst messaging that I've ever heard. Just me looking at this like a strategist, I'm thinking, why would you give your opposition $1 million audio right here and say that you're going to ban everything? Let's play this really quick for folks who missed it first hour, and then I'm going to have Kurt react to it.
Actually, crime is down. Gun violence and murder rates are up. Guns. I'm the only guy that ever got passed legislation when I was a senator to make sure we eliminated assault weapons. The idea you need a weapon that can have the ability to fire 20, 30, 40, 50, 120 shots from that weapon, whether it's a 9mm pistol or whether it's a rifle, is ridiculous. I'm continuing to push to eliminate the sale of those things, but I'm not
going to
get that done in their terms.
And as I was telling Kane earlier, you know, my Glock, I'm not saying I wouldn't accept or purchase a 120 round magazine, but I don't really have that. But to me, Kurt, he wants to call for a ban on all semi-auto, not just the quote unquote scary assault rifles, but handguns too.
It absolutely is. I'm not sure he knows that. I'm not sure he really knows anything. Look, they don't want us armed because an armed citizen is a citizen and not a serf. And I actually think it's an obligation for every American citizen to have the weapons necessary in an event it is necessary to deter or defend themselves, their family, their community, and their constitution. I think it's our obligation to have effective weapons, like what this guy would call an assault weapon. Frankly, I give everybody a military M4, like they do in Switzerland, like they do in Israel, because I think citizenship is important, and I think it is serious.
But those are government-owned, though. Those are government-owned, though, I will say that, in those instances.
They are government-owned, but they don't have to be.
I want to ask you, because you served, and just tell everybody, yes. do regular, average, everyday people, and do they carry what you carried when you served?
No.
And do you think gangbangers go out
in my case, when I would carry, for instance, a Beretta 92F or an M1911, yes, those are regular, but they're pistols. The M16s that I would carry, or M4s, those were actual military-grade weapons. They fired burst or full automatic. They are different from what we buy. I mean, how exhausted are we having to explain this to people who've never seen a gun and want to tell us about gun stuff?
Amen.
You know, down your copy of Ibram Kendi, put away the Glebot glass, come on out to the range, let me teach you, let me help you step up and do your part to protect your society. It's just, look, I'm not a gun nut. A gun is a tool. A gun is, I grew up in a house with people from rural Pennsylvania. There were guns hanging on the wall. And there were, there were shovels and hoes and
you're a shovel nut.
In the backyard. Yeah. And it should be a natural part of life where every citizen has a personal role in protecting the community. I know this because I was in the L.A. riots with the Army for 3 weeks. I saw it. I got some argument with Josh Marshall of Talking Points Memo, who started trying to mock me. He's like society falls apart. I'm like, it literally does. I've literally seen it. I've smelled the flames. I've seen the mobs. Yeah. It does. And you better be ready. And you have a duty to be ready. Just like I think everybody should know how to do CPR. Everybody should know how to do stop the bleeding. There's my car right over there in the back. I've got a quick clot. I've got blankets. I've got other things. I've got something I can make a tourniquet out in case I come across another fellow American or a visitor to our country who is injured in an accident. We need to look. Freedom and democracy are participant sports. We can't be observers. And I think this is this provides a concrete evidence of our commitment to our society, that we're willing to take off on protecting it, willing to help other people when it becomes dangerous. We have outsourced so much, and look what happens. We've outsourced all law enforcement to like the FBI, and they're a disaster.
Yeah.
We've outsourced, keeping order to the military, and
Let me ask you this question, because I know you've seen this as well. The story about Capitol Police and Democrats looking to maybe expand, which I don't understand. I mean, their jurisdictions in the Capitol, and they're not even subject to FOIA, as I understand it.
They are not.
Have offices in California and in Florida, or to have a department in California and Florida to start. To me, that, I mean, you should be able to rely upon your local police force. That's that's too much for me. That seems a little police shady.
But we allegedly have an FBI, but apparently they're too busy knocking down doors of grandmothers in Alaska looking for Nancy Pelosi's laptop. I mean, you've got them going 24/7 on, frankly, look, maybe I'm a riot snob because I was in a real one where a lot of people got killed and not just one unarmed vet shot for trespassing by mystery cop. But that wasn't a riot. That was a fracas on par with a particularly ugly playoff celebration. And they, it is to their political advantage to try and make it into the apocalypse. It is not, and we must continue to say so. I would like to see the FBI stop botching investigations of mass perverts who are molesting hundreds of girls. I would like to see them start taking seriously the tips of people who turn out to be mass shooters. I'd like to know what the hell happened in Las Vegas. I got a lot of questions about what they're doing with their time. It appears to be framing the enemies of their political patrons.
Well, that's one of the IG reports that came out.
I'm about at the point where I'm defund the FBI, put them all on jaywalking duty, and then raise the building, sow the ground with salt, and put a museum to political freedom on it.
Oh, I like a museum to political freedom.
Yes,
we should have one, just a singular one. Like, I'm talking to our friend Kurt Schlichter, whose new book The Split is a bestseller, and we're congratulating him on that. Last quick question for you. This related to Cuba, obviously. I've known you and your wife I was telling everybody, I've known you and your beautiful wife, Arena, for a number of years. Your wife's family is from Cuba, and she has been just going full hog on Facebook, educating everybody as to what her family went through. When last we saw you, she was telling me that her grandfather had been imprisoned by Castro's regime. What is your take on all of this and your thoughts on how the Biden administration has responded to what is happening in the streets in Cuba?
Well, my wife literally escaped from Cuba as an infant, and they came here and they built a life, became American citizens. My father-in-law served in the United States military. I'm unbelievably proud of these Americans by choice. And I think, leave it to socialism, Dana. They took an island full of Cubans and made it poor. Bravo. If you can do it, is there nothing socialism can't do? Right. It's like a bizarro world miracle worker. And we should be standing by the Cuban people. And look, I am not one. I have been part of interventions, military operations overseas. I am not eager to send people in. But, if I had the chance to put my uniform back on and take in a rifle, I would happily go clear that. Not simply to free the Cuban people, though that is enough. The fact is, the Chinese would love to get a foothold there. In fact, the split talks about that. And I think it is on our national interest to have a free Cuba right off our shores. And I look forward to that day. And, people say, why don't you travel to Cuba and see it? I will not set foot there unless I'm carrying a rifle or unless Cuba is free.
There you go. Amen. See, we had all these gun running operations and we ran guns to the wrong people. Imagine that. Kurt Schlichter. The book is The Split. I can't wait to read it. I have not started it yet, but I have purchased it. I have purchased it, and I'm excited to read it. Congratulations on the success. So good to see you, and can't wait to talk with you again.
You're the best. Thank you, Dana.
Thanks, Kurt. This year, Kel-Tec is celebrating 30 years of game-changing innovation and performance. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms, pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friend. friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
I do not mean to laugh at this. I'm just glad nobody got hurt, but this is hysterical. Come on. A teen was slapped in the face by a seagull on a 70-mile-per-hour slingshot ride. Okay, I have questions about getting on any ride called slingshot, because it's 2021, and this is the era of Murphy's Law. But Kylie Holman was celebrating her bestie's birthday when an uninvited guest smacked her right in the face. And there's video, which is amazing. She was skyrocketed into the air at 75 miles per hour and came face to face with a speeding seagull. She was okay. And it ended up being funny. And they have funny screen grabs from it as well. An Indonesian COVID-positive man disguised himself as his wife on a CityLink flight in order to fly. That's some dedication to try to get around the rules there. Now he's facing arrest because he disguised himself just to board this flight. He was publicly identified only by the initials DW. He boarded a CityLink domestic flight from Jakarta while wearing, he was completely covered from head to toe. This is CNN Indonesia. And it enabled him to fly even though he had tested positive. Now, his wife had tested negative, so he used her ID. How bad is their security that this guy can dress up as his wife? I mean, you can still kind of see in the eyes and in the stature. I don't care what they're wearing or how covered up they are. That was interesting. Have you visited a national park recently? Because if so, looks like your data has gone to the White House. I think our data kind of goes everywhere every time we step out of the house. But apparently this was a notice that was set to publish in the Federal Register, and it was outlined. It said that they're streamlining the process for sharing data with the executive office and allowing the National Park Services to share data with other agencies and entities suffering a cybersecurity breach when deemed, quote, reasonably necessary for helping to respond to the incident. Of course, the Park Service oversees 423 parks across the country, and they're making it easier to share data with the White House and federal agencies for permits, for special use, etc. So that's something to keep in mind. Oh, this sounds awful. And I think there was a movie made about this. They found a bunch of novel viruses in a 15,000-year-old ice from a Tibetan glacier. Unlike anything that's been cataloged to date. This is how the mummy started. Stay with us.
The various shots that people are getting now cover that. You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Okay, well, that's not true. That was from the town hall last night. That was President Biden. Welcome back, DanaLash.com. Would that be flagged as disinformation?
It should be.
I'm kind of wondering about that, because Fauci had said in audio, gosh, I think we played it Monday, and he did interviews last week about this, where he had said, well, it's to be expected that there will be people who contract the coronavirus even after they've been vaccinated. So it's a little contrary to what President Biden is stating there. And furthermore, this was a question, Kane and I actually, if we had really truly bet on this, we would have lost, because I thought Peter Doocy had asked this question and it wasn't him. But Jen Psaki was asked to comment on this, because we weren't the only people who had questions after we heard that soundbite. And he answered it the way that he did. So this was just a little bit ago. This is White House press spokesperson Jen Psaki answering a reporter's question on this very issue. Listen.
Last night, the president said you're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations. Why did he say that when that is not what the science says?
Well, what the science says is that 97% of hospitalizations are people who are unvaccinated. So, yes, there are cases of individuals who are vaccinated, to be absolutely clear, who do have gotten COVID. It is a very small percentage and a small number of people. And those cases, vast, vast, vast majority are asymptomatic, and they have minor symptoms, which means that you are largely protected. That was the point he was trying to make.
Well, don't most people have minor symptoms?
Yeah.
Everyone that I know that has had it.
Unless you have severe comorbidities.
Yeah, the two people that I know that had to be hospitalized were older, and they did have serious comorbidities. One of them had hypertension, and it was the parent of a very close friend of our family. But they ended up released from the hospital. But everyone that I had known had comorbidities, and everyone that I knew that had contracted it had pretty, they had, I mean, they had symptoms. I'm not saying that they're comfortable symptoms. Nobody wants to be sick. Nobody wants to have chest congestion. None of that stuff is fun, especially in the summer. But I do think that it contradicts this narrative that has really been pieced together by the press and this hyperbole that, oh my gosh, if you get it, you're going to die. And I've noticed this whenever I've even asked questions on social media about this or have shared a piece on this. It's interpreted as like a position against it when I'm just legitimately trying to find out answers. I mean, if I'm against something, I will tell you. And people immediately, there are always those who respond with, well, you know, if you get this, then I guess that's your life. I guess you're going to die. It's like, that's not at all accurate. And that just contributes to the hesitancy of people. That contributes a lot to people's hesitancy. When you exaggerate like that, this is not the time to exaggerate. We can politicize everything else. Fine. If people are just hell bent about that, but let's not with this. If it really is about people's lives and the health of the country, then maybe let's just not politicize it. Has that ever been offered as an option? I don't know. But I just, so that's where I thought when I heard her discuss this, like most people have.
And I have that Fauci audio.
Yes, will you play that for us, please? Flashback.
A few minutes is the phenomenon that many have been speaking about lately, and that is the occurrence of infection after full vaccination. So let's just give a bit of a background on the first slide. What do we mean by that? That is the detection of SARS-CoV-2 equal to or 14 days after completion of all recommended doses of what would be an FDA EUA authorized vaccines. It's important to remember, as I'll get to in a moment, that infections after vaccination are expected.
Okay. Actually, now he gave a straight answer there.
Yeah.
That's all people want to know.
That's the Fauci I like.
That's, yeah, just give us an answer. Just give us some information. Like, okay, this is what's up. This is the, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's all people want. And for Joe Biden to go out there and say, well, no, you got to get these vaccines. You're not going to get infected. That's, I can't stress how much that plays into this. Because I hear from you all across the country every single day. I cannot stress enough. All right, couple of other things here. The Republican fighting over what? Over everything? What are they not fighting about at this point? So here we have, you know, jobless numbers in. We got all this stuff where, you know, we could maybe have the FDA approval of the vaccine. There's so much out there. And what do we have Republican House leadership talking about? I read this piece over at Salon this morning that gets into why Republicans seem to be taking COVID seriously. I don't know that they ever didn't take it seriously. So I do take issue with the implication of that headline. The subhead is vaccine advocacy, and I'm not a fan of Amanda Marcotte at all, but they say vaccine advocacy from Hannity and McConnell gets the media off Republicans' backs but won't shift public sentiment. I have to wonder if these people have ever paid attention to things that Republicans have said about vaccines and vaccinations. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't some who have said don't get it. I'm sure that there are, but I've also seen a lot who have kind of said what Ron DeSantis said, and I still think his answer is the best, where they have been respectful of people's questions and free will, but also they want people to be healthy, and they talk about the whole process, because it is kind of weird for Republicans. Keep in mind that this is all Operation Warp Speed, and I just it's weird to me that media is making they're positioning Republicans as being against the vaccine that was developed by Trump's Operation Warp Speed. And if Republicans were better at messaging on this, I don't think that they would let the media steal that victory from them. Of course, it doesn't help when you have the now vice president out there when she was questioned as to whether or not she would take that vaccine, the Trump vaccine, as it previously had been referred to. She said that she would not. She was very hesitant about that. And she wasn't the only one. But that's what I find so weird about this. Like, the media did not want to give Trump credit for regardless of what you think about the man, they didn't want to give him credit for Operation Warp Speed. And now that we have the vaccine rollout and, you know, maybe it'll be FDA approved by August. To me, it's one of the worst narratives that have come out in some time, and a really horrible case of media malpractice, because the issue was never whether or not the vaccine itself. The issue's always been about, can the government make you inject yourself with something? Can the government force you to wear something on your face? Like, I'm not against masks. I'm not against vaccinations. I'm totally against my government forcing me to do it. Case in point, Kane, you've seen my PPE cabinet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You still have that hazmat suit in there, right?
I totally do have a gas mask. I'm not even exaggerating. Yeah. I did not have to rush out and get any of this stuff because I already had it.
That's true. Actually, you let us on the staff here have some.
Yeah, I was giving masks to everybody. N95s, too. Like the good stuff, right? Like, I got the good stuff for you. Come over here.
Remotely useful
first, it's
ones.
Free. First, it's free. No, I had all that stuff. I didn't need to go out and get any of it because I already had it. And you guys know whenever it's like flu season and I would have to fly, if I get sick, I lose my voice and you can hear it on air. And when you do that for a living, you got to be careful about that. So I always did. And sometimes if I flew Southwest, I'd wear a face mask because I discovered that if you wear a face mask and you sit in the middle seat, no one will sit by you. Now it's changed. But that was my trick in the very, that was years ago. Now it doesn't work. Don't try it. It's not going to work anymore. But I already had all of that stuff. But then the moment everyone was saying, you have to wear it, there's something in my little American DNA that I thought, I don't want to wear it now. I don't want to wear this now. Like, I don't shake hands because I don't like to touch people's sweaty palms. I don't like the hand juice. It's like the nastiest thing you could possibly do. I'll totally fit. I've always been like this. I have been like this we've talked about this as long as I've been on air. Yeah. But then it's like the moment that the government tells me not to do something, I kind of want to do it. You know, I can't help it. Just very anti-authoritarian. It's a problem. So the moment people said, oh, well, Glenn Whitley here, the judge in our area, you got to wear your mask everywhere. I didn't want to wear my mask now. All of a sudden, and I had some really nice masks. Didn't want to wear them. So, yeah, I had so much PPE that I did not have to order. I only had to order extra for my son who's in college, and it was more than he needed. And then I was able to take, for those restaurants and everything that opened up, I was able to actually take masks to everybody so that they were able to stay open and able to, you know, serve food and all that stuff. So there's some nuance. Nuance cannot be dead because what's the point of any of this? So people were never against this. They were against being forced by government to do it. And there's a huge difference there. I just really feel like they're just getting the short end of the stick. People are, citizenry is. I really do, because they, after being mistreated and losing faith for some people entirely in really their government, now they're being shamed for it. But it is weird, Kane, don't you think? Because it was Operation Warp Speed was considered a Republican victory and the media didn't like it. And then now with Biden handling the vaccine rollout, now it's presented as Republicans hate the thing that they developed and got a victory on.
I even have audio of Biden and Kamala when this was being announced back before the election and just after the election.
Yes.
How they were hesitant mm-hmm. on the
yeah,
vaccine.
Yeah, let's flashback. Let's
yeah,
hear it.
Let's hear that.
If the president announced tomorrow we have a vaccine, would you take it? Only if it was completely transparent that other experts in the country could look at it.
Can you pause that for a second?
Only if.
So why is that answer okay for him, but not for me or anybody else?
Right. And this wasn't even a full year ago.
And I don't. And here's the thing. When he said that, then I didn't fault him. So why is it okay for him to say that, but not us? Because no one can seriously argue with me that this has been an entirely transparent process. All right, sorry, go ahead.
We knew all of what went into it.
If Donald Trump can't give answers and his administration can't give answers to these three questions, the American people should not have confidence.
But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
I mean, these are Democrats. And less than a year ago.
I thought Harris's answer was the worst, but if people had hesitancy because they felt that their questions weren't being answered, and yeah. why is that legitimate then but not now? That's my whole point. That's the problem here. And everyone is getting kicked around for it. So, and I wish, you know, if Mitch McConnell's going to go out and say, well, you better get these and you better go get your jab. Otherwise, okay, well then why don't you give us some answers first? Before you sit here and start making demands of the American people, can you show us a return on the investment of our tax dollars? Can we have some data, please? I mean, I'm asking nicely. We can do this the easy way or the real easy way. Can we have some data? For over 40 years, Delta Rescue has provided dedication and everlasting love to animals that have been left abandoned. Delta is the largest no-kill and care-for-life animal sanctuary in the world. This super sanctuary is home to up to 1,500 animals that have been cruelly abandoned or born in the wilderness and cares for every animal for the entirety of that animal's life. Every animal at Delta Rescue receives the very best of care, and Delta relies solely on donor contributions from people like you for that care. By being a part of the Delta mission, you are the difference between life and death for so many of these animals. Donate today at deltarescue.org, or for more information on Delta's tax-saving estate planning, visit directly deltarescue.org/Dana and ask for my free estate package. It lays out all you need to know about growing your estate while letting your compassion for animals live well into the future. This is only available at deltarescue.org/Dana. Show your dedication and everlasting love and make your legacy work for the animals. Visit deltarescue.org/Dana today.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So, the Cocoa Police, they've had some problems with stolen cruisers lately. And according to Click Orlando, they have now, Florida Man at the police department has now come up with a new policy to avert these police cars from getting stolen. And this is what Chief Evander Collier said, quote, "I don't want to go into detail about the policy, but I can tell you it's a no-brainer. You don't leave your car running and unlocked with a key in it." And scene. There you go, right there. That's let's see. That actually does, you know, that does prevent theft if you don't leave your vehicle running and the key in it. That does actually prevent it. Good Samaritan Florida Man. This is a great story. W-E-S-H. And a Good Samaritan Florida Man, he used a dog leash as a tourniquet while rescuing a Florida man attacked by an 8-foot gator. And what I've been telling you people, like if you even see a puddle, there's a gator in it. Just assume that there's a gator in a puddle. Last time I was in Florida, I was not there 5 minutes. I'm not even exaggerating. And I saw a gator. So Jed Grafe from, oh, wait, no, this is not that. Oh, where'd my story go? Here it is. So this Florida man, he saw a neighbor actually in dealing with an alligator. There's like one sentence about this, and I have no idea why this is in Martin County, Florida. The guy was walking his dog. He saw a man literally just, it was like at a Boy Scout camp, and it was on a trail. And apparently the guy was on his bike, and he fell into a creek, and boom, 8-foot female gator was right there waiting. And the guy was like fighting for his life. And so the dog stayed when he told it to, but he took the dog leash and was able to use it as a tourniquet to control the bleeding from the flesh wound in the man's leg. He held it tight. He didn't cut off the blood too much. He said, "You got to be careful with it." The victim was airlifted to the hospital with serious injuries and is in stable condition. That guy saved his life. Good guy, Florida guy. We got a lot more on the way. Don't go anywhere. More of The Dana Show up next.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.